Calling all my Asian squad everywhere! It is time to put a spotlight on our story! Welcome to your dose of inspiration with me, Richard Juan. In this episode, we have with us a member of the Philippine House of Representatives from Bataan's 1st District. She's the first transgender woman elected in the Philippine Congress. She was hailed as one of the 13 inspiring women of 2016 by Time Magazine. She has been championing the rights and causes of the LGBTQIA+ community. Folks, let's all welcome Congresswoman Geraldine Roman. Hi, Congresswoman.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be in your podcast.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here to do this little quick discussion or interview. And very simple. We're just going to have a very casual chat about LGBTQIA and, of course, all the things that you've done for the Congress and for the public. So let's start things off with, I was told that you started as a journalist, before becoming a public servant. So what encouraged you to pursue a political career?
Well, actually, I was leading a quiet life in Spain, where I lived for 22 years. But way back in 2012, my father fell ill. He was diagnosed with 4th-stage emphysema. And because he had been such a loving father, so accepting, so understanding of me, well, I thought it would be a perfect chance to show my love to him and return the love that he gave me. So I went back in 2012, I took a leave from my work as a journalist in Spain. And during my intimate conversations with my father, he posed this very existential question to me. He asked me, "Geraldine, what is the meaning and purpose of your life?" And of course, I was surprised by the depth of the question. But I asked him too, "What do you want me to tell you? I mean, I work. I earn money, I save, I get to travel, I get to shop. So what else do you want me to do?" And this he told me, he said, "Geraldine, as long as your life revolves around yourself and you do not help others, your life has no true meaning." So I took that statement as a challenge for me to continue in the tradition of public service in my family, because I also come from a family of politicians. We've been in public service since 1978. So everything has been serendipitous since then. And true enough, public service has given me deeper meaning in life.
Did you always know that you were going to get into politics somehow, or was it more of like it just happened?
Not at all. It was serendipitous. It was surprise, a shocking surprise, really. Mm-hmm. They were actually grooming my younger brother, who was a lawyer and a junior of my father, for this position. So I would have never imagined this would happen to me. But nevertheless, life is full of surprises, and sometimes these surprises give you the best options. So I'm just glad I'm here and I'm being given the privilege to serve the people of the 1st District of Bataan, as well as the entire LGBTQ community, as well as all Filipinos, for that matter.
I'm just going to ask this question straight. Is it because that you were transgender, which is why you never thought of going into politics at first? Or did that play a role?
Yes, honestly speaking, the mere thought of a transgender woman joining Philippine politics for me was unthinkable. And yes, it was one of the factors. But of course, I was quite happy in Spain. I was leading a quiet life, and art and culture and history are things that I feel passionate about. And Spain has a lot of those things. And of course, I also have my better half, who is still based in Madrid. So, I had a quiet, happy life there. But nevertheless, I'm not one to turn my back at the opportunities that come along my way. And you can sense if this is a good opportunity, and I grabbed it.
Wow. So, of course, you said that you kind of took that opportunity and moved back to the Philippines to serve the people. So how did it feel when you were finally elected as the first transgender congresswoman in the Philippine Congress? Like, what did it mean to you and to the community?
Well, it was a glorious victory because I had to undergo a lot of insults, a lot of premature judgments, and discrimination during the campaign period. My political rivals at that time would use my gender as an issue against me. So it was kind of difficult because that was my first encounter of discrimination. Honestly speaking, while I was living in Spain, my gender was never an issue because Spanish society or European society in general is quite advanced in terms of LGBT rights and equality and non-discrimination. And we still have a lot of things to do here in our own country before we reach that level. You know, during the campaign period, there were times I would cry by myself and ask myself if the insults, you know, were worth it. And I came to the conclusion that, you know, if they have nothing, no other issue to use against me, it must be because I have a good chance of winning, and I could use my gender as a good platform to fight for my advocacies.
So you said that during the campaign period, there were a lot of like discrimination, insults. What about when you were elected, when you were already in the Congress? Were there any issues there? Were there any times where people would say stuff that's inappropriate?
Well, in general, my entry into Congress was a positive one. I had been forewarned by friends and colleagues of my mother and my father in Congress that there would be an old boys club in Congress. But to my pleasant surprise, people treated me in a very normal way. They treated me with dignity and respect, the same kind of dignity and respect that is due all Filipinos. And for my part, I tried to always put my best foot forward because not only do I carry the representation of the First District of Bataan, but by extension, because I'm a member of the LGBT community, I also carry the rainbow flag of the LGBT community in Congress. It turned out that I would be the visible face of the LGBT community in Congress. So I always try to do my best in my work and in my dealings with my colleagues in Congress. And I guess I must have impacted them positively because I have gained their respect, which is not to say that there are a few individuals, especially those ultra-conservative religious congressmen who's to try to misgender me just to prove a point. They would use masculine pronouns to refer to me, even during our committee hearings. But then, of course, their nature would betray them because when they are relaxed and unconscious, they would also refer to me using female pronouns.
Right.
I guess it's just human nature. When you deal with somebody who presents herself as a woman, and chances are you'll refer to that person as a she. But I guess I just have to respect the religious beliefs of these people. But I often ask myself, which is more important, trying to prove yourself right or being kind? And I guess they're not that kind.
So how do you plan to further combat inequality and discrimination during your time in Congress?
Well, since the 17th Congress, I've been pushing for the passage of the Anti-Discrimination Bill on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity and expression, more commonly known as the SOGI Equality Bill. It was an easier ride for me in the 17th Congress when my victory was still something new, and everybody was excited about the possibility of finally legislating something that would favor the entire LGBT community. And in fact, we were able to pass the SOGI Equality Bill unanimously in the lower house, although it was stalled in the Senate. Now in the 18th Congress, because we have the pandemic in the midst of everything, the journey has not that been smooth. First of all, it's very hard to lobby for the SOGI Equality Bill because I do not get to interact with my colleagues on a personal and direct basis. Everything is done by Zoom or online media platforms. And it's different when you have to convince newcomers in Congress about the importance of an anti-discrimination bill. Nevertheless, there is also another anti-discrimination bill, and we call this the Comprehensive Anti-Discrimination Bill. On the basis of sex, gender, age, civil status, race, religion, physical appearance, as well as sexual orientation and gender identity and expression. And I guess this is gaining more traction in Congress because, you know, contrary to the accusations of the opponents of the Social Equality Bill, the Comprehensive Anti-Discrimination Bill is more, as the name suggests, more encompassing.
Yeah.
It does not hint at any kind of privileged or special situation, but covers all possible grounds for discrimination.
So for some of our listeners who are not too familiar with the whole SOGI Equality Bill, what would you say is the core essence of it?
Basically, it's an anti-discrimination bill. And contrary to the false accusations of its opponents, this is not a same-sex marriage bill that will allow couples, same-sex couples, to have their relationship legally recognized. And this is not a gender recognition bill either that will allow members of the trans community to change their legal gender markers. This is simply an anti-discrimination bill which seeks to address situations of discrimination at the workplace, in schools, in the delivery of government services, or in the access and use of commercial and public establishments, public accommodations, etc. To give you an example, for example, at the workplace, if a person who is very qualified is being groomed for promotion, but all of a sudden his or her boss discovers that that person is in a same-sex relationship, and the boss all of a sudden automatically eliminates does not consider the promotion solely on the basis of that same-sex relationship. I mean, what does that relationship have to do with that person or that employee's
exactly.
capacity to work well in his job? I mean, these are irrelevant circumstances. So clearly, this is a case of discrimination. And under the SOGI Equality Bill, this type of behavior will be penalized. So the violator can be meted a prison term of up to 1 year and fines of up to 500,000 pesos, which are irrelevant. Or, for example, during the last distribution of the social amelioration program of the government for the pandemic, I have heard of certain cases of same-sex couples who try to avail of financial aid through the social amelioration program, but they were denied by the barangay officials because the barangay officials said that, you are not legally married, or that your relationship is not recognized or not real or not valid. I mean, these are human beings that have to eat three times a day,
correct.
Whether they are in a same-sex relationship or not. So these situations are obviously discriminatory and would be consequently penalized under the SOGI Equality Bill.
Wow. I mean, quite honestly, like, these are so many things that you're sharing that me, as someone who has done readings on this, are not too familiar with all these things. And I'm sure a lot of people out there who just hear about the SOGI bill, they'll be like, oh, it's just, you know, for passing, like you mentioned, passing of same-sex marriage and all that. So I think that's the common misconception about it.
Oh, because the opponents have been spreading lies about the SOGI Equality Bill, which for me is unbecoming of them. You know what, if you have strong arguments, better tell the truth and just try to, you know, convince us using logic and your debating skills, whatever.
Yeah.
But don't spread lies. I mean, this is not same-sex marriage. And some people also try to reduce the anti-discrimination bill into a bathroom issue. And it is not
yes,
just
I've
about
heard of
bathrooms.
That. Yeah.
You see, these are basic rights that should be enjoyed by all Filipinos. The right to work, the right to study, the right to avail of good services from the government, the right to use public and commercial establishments.
So going back to what you mentioned earlier about the Comprehensive Anti-Discrimination Bill, how important it is or how crucial is it for this bill to pass and to be made into law?
You know what? I've been hearing a lot of arguments, you know. There are some people who want to be stuck in the Middle Ages. They say, oh no, there's no discrimination because we Filipinos are compassionate and kind. Now that is wishful thinking, really. You cannot generalize. And even if they believe that there are a few cases of discrimination in our country, I don't agree with them. And if that were true, we should not be, complacent. And we should not be resigned to having just a few cases of discrimination. There should be zero cases of discrimination. This is basically establishing the fundamentals of our dealings in society. Non-discrimination is based in a recognition of the inherent dignity of every individual. In dignity as a child of God, if you are a believer, dignity as a citizen of this country, and dignity as a human being. And therefore, because that person has inherent dignity, that person should be treated equally and be given equal opportunities and equal rights, as well as equal protection under the law. So to others, this bill, especially in the context of a pandemic, which is affecting our country economically and socially and health-wise, may seem unnecessary. But this is so basic because it establishes the underlying and fundamental principles of how our society should be. If we are to create a society that is inclusive, diverse, where every Filipino is made to feel welcome, regardless of his or her personal circumstances, then we should have an anti-discrimination bill. We should just not rely on wishful thinking and hope that people will be kinder or not. We have to send a clear message to society that it is not okay to discriminate.
That is true. Now I'm kind of understanding more the reason why we really need to have this, and not just, you know, like I said, we just have to be more kind. It's not like, it doesn't work like that anymore. So would you say Philippines now is a lot more inclusive of the community right now compared to, let's say, maybe even 10 years ago? Because me personally, when I first moved to the Philippines, it was a huge change of pace. It was very different growing up in Hong Kong, where everything was very, I hate to say this, but like very homophobic to a certain extent. I was raised in an environment where you can't be too feminine, you know? And coming to the Philippines, it was very different for me in a sense that, oh my God, I felt like it was very accepted, but yet I would learn more about how there were a lot of discrimination also. And then compare now to like 2021, I feel like it's a lot more open. Would you say?
Well, according to a survey conducted here in Asia, Philippines ranks number one, in terms of acceptance of members of the LGBT community. But I would like to draw the line and distinguish between acceptance and tolerance. I believe that what we have in the Philippines is more of tolerance. And people had their way. You know, tolerance would imply that you're just allowing something that would otherwise be undesirable to coexist with you. But this is not the same as acceptance. I mean, the mere fact that we have a basic law like the Soju Equality Bill or the Anti-Discrimination Bill, which is encountering challenges and is being challenged by the conservatives, is already reflective of how society would tend to think. And the sad thing is that they would also weaponize religion or use God or religion to justify their homophobic and transphobic ideas. Now, you know, you can only test the level of acceptance when this is already reflected in official policies, you see. And by that, I mean laws. If there are no laws that recognize the LGBT community, how can you say that a society is really accepting of the LGBT community? I mean, it's all talk, but we won't we'll just be talking and talking without walking the talk, without reflecting it on official policy. Now that would be the measure of the authenticity of the claims that the Philippines is a very accepting society towards the LGBT community.
So Philippines is more of a country where it's very tolerating but not accepting,
yes,
compared to,
yes,
let's say maybe in Thailand.
Exactly, exactly. I would say, or even Taiwan. Taiwan already has same-sex marriage. Also, Japan has gender recognition laws. They also have civil partnerships. But here in the Philippines, what do we have? You know, we have a fundamental law that would ensure the right to work, the right to study, the right to receive services from the government, which are so basic. I mean, you can't live without working or earning,
yeah,
a living. And for you to be able to access jobs, you have to study. Now, if you don't have these laws, I mean, what can you expect from society? I mean, you just can't rely on the goodwill of some people. There has to be laws.
Okay. Do you think legalized civil unions, regardless of gender, is attainable in a country like the Philippines that is deeply rooted in the traditions and beliefs?
It should be. We can't be stuck in the Middle Ages. And besides, you know, if you analyze what the civil partnership or civil union bill is, it simply deals with a legal formula that will allow same-sex or straight couples who are in stable relationships, long-standing stable relationships outside marriage, to legalize the relationships. And I don't see the reason why there should be excessive concern over the civil partnerships. To begin with, this is not marriage. You see, the religious groups want a monopoly of the term marriage, so let them keep that term. What we are interested in are legal rights and legal obligations of a legally recognized relationship, and this will be possible through a civil partnership law.
What about this? Do you think that equality is achievable in this lifetime? When I say equality, I mean not equity, but equality.
Equality is a difficult word if you want to be technical,
yeah,
about it, you know. Equity is actually better, because we try to give to those who have, give more to the who have, to those who have less in life. That is the essence of equity. In fact, that is a more modern concept. Technical equality of, you know, just being technically equal and everything is really impossible. But the essence of equality and the equity are basically the same. And this is just giving opportunities and allowing people to become their best selves to these opportunities, and also to the protection, equal protection under the law, regardless of their personal circumstances. Now, is it possible in my lifetime? Well, I have every intention in the world to live until I'm 94. So that's also possible.
Why so specific, 94?
Or 95, I don't know.
I thought there was a reason for 94, because people would be like 95, 90, 100, but 94 sounded very specific.
94, I don't know. Just came across my mind. 97, mm-hmm, better yet, or 99, why not?
Because like when we talk equity and we talk equality, like, because people, I read a lot about equity and equality, and equality is more of the equal opportunities, and equity is having the equal results, if I'm not mistaken. And for the LGBTQIA community, do you want to achieve equity or equality?
Both.
Which one would be a more, you know, a priority, or the first one to be easy,
well,
to
actually,
achieve, maybe even?
I think I would start with equality. You know why? Because discrimination against the LGBT, just like discrimination against women, are deeply ingrained. In fact, in our country, where we have endured centuries of patriarchy, you know, discriminatory behavior is already normalized and even institutionalized. And for you to break that kind of deeply ingrained behavior, you have to provide some sort of a measure, and this would be equality. And we become technical about it, you see. Of course, when it comes to equity, I think it is not what I just said is not in contradiction to equity as well. And we also seek the same results, basically. So these are two compatible concepts in practice. Let us just say that equality could be more, it's more technical.
Easier to achieve.
It's simpler, I would say. Simpler. Just apply the same rule or give the same opportunity to everyone without necessarily having to analyze case-to-case situations. Because equity would necessitate a careful analysis of the situation of the beneficiaries. You would have to assess where that person is lacking and try to compensate in order to level the playing field.
Yeah. That's one thing that I've always been debating to myself. Like, in life, do we want to achieve equality, equal opportunities for everyone? Because, I mean, we're all born different. Like, some people are stronger, some people are weaker. So do we want to give everyone an equal result, or do we want to give people an equal playing field to start with? And it's up to their ability on whether or not they will achieve the heights or the results that they want.
Well, you give them equal opportunities. Now, if they don't grab these opportunities, that's their fault.
All right. And then, so my last question before we play a little game is, what is the biggest lesson that you learned during your time in public office and fighting for the rights of the LGBTQIA+ community?
That politics is an imperfect system. And really, we try to fight with our principles intact, but that is nearly impossible. You know, in the spheres of power, people will yield their power and even ignore your principles or what is right or what is wrong. So our moral compass becomes more or less flexible. But does that make us politicians evil people? I don't think so. Our ultimate objective in politics should be the good of the vast majority of the people that we serve. And sometimes we have to sacrifice our principles along the way just for the greater good. And that's just the way things are in politics. So to the youth who might want to join politics in the future, well, just be warned that you might be up for surprises. We have our ideals, the ideals of youth, our principles, which should always serve as our moral compass and our guide in life. But the reality of things is such that, you know, when you have to operate in an imperfect system, some compromise has to be made. And these are not easy decisions. Sometimes you have to choose between two evils. You just have to choose the lesser one, you see. Mm. And that's life, not only in politics, but also in the corporate world, everywhere. Life is filled with compromises. Does that make you a bad person? It shouldn't, as long as your ultimate goals are good.
Wow, that is so deep. So for part two of our interview, you will help me translate LGBTQ slogans to Spanish. Okay, let's try phrases like, yeah, let's start with love is love. How do you say that in Spanish?
El amor es el amor. Love
el amor
is love. Amor.
Es. Amor.
El amor es el amor. Love is
el
love.
El amor es el amor.
That's right.
El is E-L, right? El amor.
E-L. That's a definite article, the. Because the concept of love in Spanish is always preceded by the definite article. It's literally spoken is the love is the love. But el amor es el amor. How about love wins?
Yes, let's go with love wins. I was literally about to say that too, I promise. And wait, let me guess. El amor campeones? No, that is
the verb is ganar, to win.
Ay, ganar.
El amor siempre gana. Literally, translated, that would be love always wins. El amor siempre gana. Siempre in Spanish means always. El amor
just
siempre
like Tagalog.
Gana. But siempre in Tagalog has become, of course. El amor siempre gana. How about love knows no gender?
Gana.
El amor siempre gana.
El amor, love, I can't. I think you should teach me.
El amor no conoce.
No
géneros.
Conoce.
No conoce géneros.
Love
no knows no genders. Géneros.
Géneros.
Géneros. Género is a gender, but there are several genders. So, el amor no conoce géneros. Meaning.
El amor no conoce géneros.
Or you can say, en el amor, in love, el género no importa. Gender does not matter, right?
El amor.
En el amor.
En el amor.
No importa el género.
No importa género.
El género. Oh, last phrase. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. Let's go for that one.
Feliz mes del orgullo LGBT.
Feliz mes
del orgullo.
Del orgullo.
Orgullo. LGBT.
What does LGBT mean?
That's L.
Oh.
LGBT.
Got it.
LGBT.
LGBT. Got it. Okay. All right, Miss Geraldine. One last final question. This Pride Month, what is your message to the LGBTQIA community who wants to pursue a career like yours and who wants to serve the Philippines in the future as a public servant?
I would like to tell members of the community who would like to follow in my footsteps that gender should not be a hindrance to serving our country. I know there will be people who will try to use your sexual orientation or your gender identity as an issue and try to place stumbling blocks along the way simply because of your sexual orientation or your gender identity. But do not mind them. As long as your ultimate goals are good, there should be no reason to stop you. Just study hard, work hard, make the right decisions, and be determined to fight for equality. You are a living proof that we are valid as human beings, valid as Filipinos, and we should not let anyone step on our rights. The fight continues, and this Pride Month is a simple reminder to all of us that we should celebrate who we are, whom we truly are, whom we truly love, and we are valid. So happy Pride, my dear brothers and sisters in the LGBT community. I love you.
Oh, thank you so much for that message. And I think all of our listeners out there have learned so much from you today, Miss Geraldine. And once again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And happy Pride Month, guys. And this is your dose of inspiration with Richard Juan.